This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We tape in the offices of Raider, a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work. We understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. I'd like to thank Iberia Bank, our premier sponsor. They support our community in so many ways, and their dynamic team is committed to serving the banking needs of clients in this region and throughout the southeastern United States. Iberia Bank offers the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit iberiabank.com for more information. The generosity of Lafayette General Health also makes this podcast possible, and we thank them for being a premier sponsor. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit regional health system, Lafayette General Health is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. Our guest today is Ruffin Rodrigue, owner of Ruffino's on the River in Lafayette, as well as Ruffino's in Baton Rouge and Ruffino's Catering in downtown Baton Rouge. An all-SEC guard who played at LSU from 1986 through 1989. Ruffin has received many accolades for his work in the hospitality industry, including Louisiana's Marketer of the Year in 2016 and Restaurateur of the Year by the Louisiana Restaurant Association in 2015. Now, Ruffin, everybody has a story, but you have a really good story. Thank you for joining us on Discover Lafayette, and thank you for being so patient with me as I tape this from my home.
thank you for having me. Made me feel pretty good about myself after you introduced me like that.
Yeah. So. Well, you have a lot to share, and of course, we're talking during the coronavirus, but you've been through a lot. You've been in the hospitality industry following a successful college football career. So why don't we start with, you know, your background and kind of lead us to where you are today.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Thibodaux, Louisiana, Lafourche Parish. Graduated in 1985. Went to LSU, kind of followed my dad's footsteps. My dad was a great player for the Tigers in the early 60s, mm-hmm. You know, serving on the Chinese Bandit and all the famous teams they had back then. And same name. He was Ruffin Rodrigue Sr. Mm-hmm. He is Ruffin Rodrigue Sr. I came in 85 and was defensive player in high school and then switched to offense when I got to LSU, and I redshirted in 1985. And my first year of eligibility was 86, and that was that year with Coach Bill Ornsparger. We won the SEC championship, and then 1987, we had probably our best team winning in the we won the our bowl game against South Carolina and ended up, I think, number three in the country. And,
wow.
And then 1988, we won the SEC championship again. And
there's nothing like that, huh? Being in LSU Stadium.
Yeah, it just you know, in the '80s, it was just so cool. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, wasn't as big as it is today with both you know, the end zone being closed and all the suites and all the. You look up now and it's a monster. But yeah, the fans, the people, all the wonderful things I got to do and meet, mm-hmm. were fantastic. It was a great career.
Had you grown up going to the games? Was your dad, did he continue to go to the football games when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah, he didn't miss. I don't think he missed one in college. he or my mom, they went on the road. They had their crew. They had a good time. Uh-huh. It was a good time to be a Tiger fan, being on the road games and all the fun they had. So we, they didn't miss anything. And, you know, they would interview, you know, I think we went to Ohio State one year and they interviewed him in the stands.
Oh, gosh.
So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. So you graduated in marketing, I think you told me.
I did. I went to business school and graduated in spring of 1990 with a degree in marketing, and really didn't know what to do with it. So, but I knew I had a little football left, and the World League of American Football, which ended up being the NFL Europe game call. And then I went to play, and I played in London and Barcelona and Frankfurt, Germany, and all that. Had had a really fun time for a year. Then got hurt in Montreal and pretty much ended my career. And came back home and went to work in the beer industry. Mm-hmm. It's Mockler beverage here. It's sort of like Schilling of Lafayette.
Right.
And worked for them in marketing and sales, and really got to know a lot of people, did events, and really had a lot of fun for about 5 years. And then moved on to the restaurant industry, up to my good friend TJ Moran, who's the first franchisee of Ruth Chris Steakhouse.
Right.
Called and wanted to open up a themed restaurant with, at the time, Coach Jerry DiNardo, who's Italian and from New York and had a lot of success at LSU. So we used his name and had a lot of fun with opening an Italian restaurant, but he wasn't successful on the field after that. Ended up getting fired. So that's when we bought his share out and changed the name to Ruffino's. I think it was in 2000, I think.
Was that your idea?
Yeah, well, I give the idea. I mean, there's a lot of customers that claim it was pretty easy transition. Yeah, pretty easy transition, being that with my name, which is of Cajun descent, change it to an Italian, kind of just add an O to the end of Ruffin, and you get it's the most popular Italian wine in the world.
Right.
And it made it real easy.
And I want to mention, TJ Moran was not just the first franchisee of Ruth's Chris, but he also is the TJ. I mean, I know he's deceased, but he's the TJ of TJ Ribs.
Yes.
And he's just iconic. So this must have been exciting to be working with people that were the best in their field.
And that's why I got into the restaurant business. I wouldn't have done it if I wouldn't have had a mentor like him. He was the best.
Right.
You know, he was successful with Ruth Chris all around the country. You mentioned TJ Ribs, huge success, and he had Ninfa's Mexican restaurant, which was a huge success. Now, he had some failures too, but majority of his business was fantastic, and it was a good run for him. And I learned all the good principles of how to do business the right way and how to treat people the right way, and in the hardest business probably in the world.
That's what I was thinking. You know, so many of the successful restaurateurs that we know of, everything they've done hasn't been a success, but they just kept on moving.
So it was a good transition from the beer industry to restaurants. It was, you know, a lot more hours, a lot more work, a lot of learning. I was young. I was 30, I think, when I transitioned over. And you know, 22 years later, you know, still striving to make it better every day, which was TJ's motto.
So you started in Baton Rouge because that's where you were living, and that's out on, is it on Highland Road or off?
Highland Road is so historic and long, it goes through LSU, but it ends at Airline Highway near the interstate. Mm-hmm. So we're right off between Airline Highway and the interstate off Highland Road, you know, going towards New Orleans.
Right. And I know through the years, what year did that open?
1998.
Okay. I know through the years, you've ended up, you've had a partner too. You had TJ and a partner, and then now you're the sole proprietor.
My partner and chef, we bought out TJ 10 years ago. And then, almost 2 years ago, my partner wanted to get into consulting business as a chef, which is his real talent. So I bought out his half of the business and never looked back.
Now, are you a chef also?
No, I you know, being from South Louisiana, I love to cook. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm in the perfect business because, you know, a boy from Thibodaux that had no interest in hunting or fishing, which is odd.
Yeah. Well, you were a ball player.
Well, you know, most of my ball player friends were the biggest hunters and fishermen you could find. My dad really never did it. Mm-hmm. I always just worked a lot. My dad was in a funeral business. You know, 11 years old, realized how much I disliked baseball.
Oh.
And I think we didn't have the diagnosis back then, but the old ADHD kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting in a baseball dugout and you're not and you're impatient. They don't have any medicine for it. Believe me, it was. So my dad said, "Come to work with me." So every summer, from 11 years old till I went to LSU, I dug graves in St. Mary Parish, Morgan City area, and that's where I learned the true meaning of work. Getting up early, you know, as a youngster, and driving to another city, and getting in a cemetery with a shovel in my hand, digging in 100+ plus temperatures. You learn a lot.
Right.
And you also learn a lot about death and about sorrow, and so it kind of turned me on a path to live a more happy, joyful life, which is the hospitality industry.
Yeah, I didn't realize that about you. I know you're friends with Todd Graves, right? Is that
yeah?
Is he an old friend from way back, or is he?
Todd and I met, I think he had 3 Raising Cane's at the time.
Okay.
And I was just a manager here at Rufino's. It was about 22 years ago, right? 22 years ago.
When I heard you mention Graves, I just wondered if that was.
Yeah, we had an instant. It's one of those friendships when you first meet somebody, you know, it's going to be a lifelong friendship.
Mm-hmm.
It has been.
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to mention Jim Dore before we get off on another topic. Jim, I know, is a coach for you through the Vistage. I know he's an executive coach, and he recommended that we do this podcast so you can share your whole story. And he's spoken so highly of you, your dedication to the industry, and, you know, it's including today, hanging on with the coronavirus and what it's done to the restaurant industry. So I just wanted to let you maybe talk about some of your early career, and I don't know if you've ever been through times like this. Did some of the oil bust in the past affect you in your business, or were y'all able to, you know, sidestep some of the hard times that we're having now?
We had our challenges. Until I opened up Lafayette, I knew nothing about the oil and gas industry. Even being from Thibodeau, and where home is huge, with so a lot of family in it. My uncle is the vice president of BP in Houma, and I mean, there's a I know so many in that industry. When we were first in the restaurant industry, Baton Rouge is pretty outside of the Exxon, you know, mm-hmm. Refinery. Baton Rouge is more of petrochemical
right.
Area that is low oil prices help them, from what I hear, you know, more than
right.
heard. And LSU is huge. So whenever we have, you know, that we went through the hurricanes, which were pretty brutal on the business. Katrina was actually positive for.
Oh yeah.
For
the
our
influx.
Restaurant.
Uh-huh.
We're the first restaurant, you know, in, mm-hmm. from New Orleans, and most of the wealthier New Orleanians that moved were able to move to Baton Rouge, and where my restaurant is in Baton Rouge is the Country Club of Louisiana and Santa Maria and all these really nice homes, and they just got bought up by all these New Orleans millionaires. And so my restaurant actually
uh-huh.
did well, you know. I mean, we Baton Rouge exploded.
It really did. Yeah.
And then the BP oil spill, we actually did. I was one of them that didn't get any money from that because we did more business because of staycations. People that couldn't go to the beach and couldn't their beach house, so they stayed back. But we've had our challenges. You know, we the restaurant in Lafayette flooded in 16. That was tough on us.
Yeah.
The bar flooded. I really had to do a lot of work. but the community supported us and really stood behind us and got it back open. And then, you know, the oil and gas. My buddy Jamie Howard, former, not teammate, but former LSU ball player, called me and said, it's going to be bad. You know, this oil price is coming down. It's going to be bad for a little while. Expense accounts are going to dry up. And I really didn't. I knew what he was talking about, but I didn't see it being that bad. But he got really, really low for a while.
Right.
But we worked hard and, you know, worked on the healthcare industry and got a lot of pharmaceutical parties in and different things in the IT business. You know, it's not oil and gas expense accounts. When those guys are rolling, that's big business.
Yeah.
But we've been able to hire great managers and, keep the ball going. It's just been, fun place to be with outdoor seating and the beauty of the Vermilion River and a gorgeous bar.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to hopefully reopening soon to get people out of their cabin fever.
Right. Ruffin, I'd like to take a break if we can. I want to, after this break, go into what's going on right now in Lafayette and some things, the struggles and what you'd like to see. But I'd like to pause and thank Rally Marketing for sponsoring a new addition to our podcast, Discover Lafayette's Past. Rally Marketing is a full-service digital marketing agency that can assist you with marketing automation, content development, search engine optimization, and show you how to use social media to turn into a moneymaker for your business. Our friends at Rally Marketing are there to help you navigate the maze of all the latest ways to market online effectively. Please visit rallymarketing.com for more information. And now for the moment, and Ruffin, I wanted to look back on the history of Camellia Boulevard since you're situated there. I don't know if you were familiar with all this, but back in 1952, the city of Lafayette recognized that Pinhook Road couldn't handle all of the traffic. Over the next 29 years, feasibility studies were conducted to determine the best placement of a bridge over the Vermilion to effectively move traffic. And I can tell you as an aside, when I moved here in 83, I couldn't figure out how to get around Lafayette. So finally, just to share this with you, in 1981, there was a route study by Domingue Szabo and Associates recommending the Camellia Boulevard route. On August 4th, a bond issue, which included the Camellia Boulevard extension, was voted and approved on. But then a citizens group called Save Our Subdivision was formed to oppose the construction. On March 18th, 1983, Mayor Douglas Strapp announced his recommendation to the city council that, quote, we construct a four-lane river crossing at the Camellia Boulevard on the south side of Lafayette. So environmental and engineering studies were done. Citizens continued to protest. But in 1985, the Camellia Boulevard project was included in a bond referendum and approved by Lafayette voters. Fast forward to 1993, alternatives were still being looked at. But in April of 93, the report recommended construction and more environmental assessments were done. In 1996, the Lafayette Consolidated Council adopted a resolution directing that the Camellia Boulevard Bridge become a top priority. In 99, in January, contractors began moving homes from the corridor. In 2001, in August, the contract for construction of bridge and the section of roadway between Settlers Trace Boulevard and Cambridge Drive was awarded. And then on September 8th, 2003, a ribbon-cutting ceremony was held to declare the bridge officially open. So you probably were not aware of all of this, not being, in the Lafayette area, but this was a major controversy and right where you're situated. And then once it opened, people just went, oh, this is nice,
Yeah.
So you're situated right there in the middle of a great area of Lafayette, and yet I know things have kind of come to a halt as far as dining in and the whole restaurant industry. If we can pick back up our conversation about what's going on now.
Yeah, that was that. We actually did a ribbon cutting on the 10th anniversary.
Oh, okay.
In 14. At the restaurant to celebrate the bridge, which has just been huge for local business in Lafayette and just transit and opening up easier ways to get to Youngsville, to
Oh, just anywhere. I mean, yeah.
Anywhere. And all the other places just exploded. So it was the biggest thing I think ever happened for Lafayette. Looking back and how it was to where it is now, because River Ranch, the perception when we first got there was, you know, I mean, it's the best community or mixed development, whatever they call it, mm-hmm. I've ever been in. Still today, you know, going around country in different places, I'm like just blown away yeah. by the way they built it, and it's just perfectly done.
And Steve Ood, the architect, and Robert Daigle, and Rodney Savoy, that just, whole group, it's a quality.
It's safe. It's just really well done. So, and everybody told us it's the best location, you know, anywhere, right there on the river, and that's where we were lucky enough to buy Couchon out of New Orleans out.
In 2013,
yeah. After I think they were in business for like 9 months.
Oh gosh!
When they knew, they read the writing on the wall, and being that the Donald Link was a friend, and his father-in-law would come to the restaurant Baton Rouge, they knew that we would be able to to make it work. So we bought them out, and it was a huge success.
What do you think was different, if you can touch on that? What did you bring, you know, to turn that around? What was it that Jeff and Roderick brought to that?
Yeah, well, restaurants differ in so many different ways, personality-wise, culture, what's your message, what are you trying to achieve? And what we had in Baton Rouge was something special, the tie with LSU, you know, the local ties, mm-hmm. The energy that we brought, music, all the things that I brought, are the intangibles or the outside of the food. It's more about the energy and the fun and the lighting and the, you know, way we set up tables and the way we set up private parties and just energizing the place. And I thought we brought that to a place that just. Where the way Couchon looked at it was, you know, it was all about the food, and it was chef driven, and they wanted a kind of a hippie kind of place, and just, you know, you have to mesh with the community. It just didn't do that. They didn't have a good friendship with the community.
We have so many good restaurants. You really have to distinguish yourself.
Well, you do, and you know, every town has multiple, you know, different restaurants. You have so many places you go and you see. The one thing about Lafayette that's different is what I noticed is there were most restaurants are casual dining. Not many white tablecloth restaurants, and that's what we are. But we're white tablecloth, but we're also fun and kind of a casual fun fine dining, if you want to call it, which I knew there was a niche for in Lafayette. People were looking for a place to call their own. You know, Stephanie Cox does such a great job at La Fonda, uh-huh. and the history of their bar, but their bar's so small, you know, it's you know, people were looking for a place to meet with large parties, and we hit that niche. And it was fun because of the people that I knew in the beginning that we would, you know, heard their business, like Charlie Goodson and the Charlie G's, but he reached out, and I became, what I did from a marketing standpoint, is when we first bought it in, I think it was January, we didn't open till May, but between January and May, I lived in Lafayette. You know, I basically got an apartment and went out every night and met people, went to charity events, went to political events, met every, you know, mm-hmm. knew a lot of people already from my connections. And we had a following from Lafayette in our Baton Rouge restaurant. But it was really just kind of an easy transition for me because I'm from Thibodeau. I have the Cajun heritage, and it was fun. And the grand opening was, you know, it was huge. And for the next few years, until the oil and gas kind of mm-hmm. tanked a little bit, I don't know of a restaurant that had an opening like that anywhere.
Right.
I've never seen anything like it. So, but the good thing is, you know, even with a struggling industry, when you find good managers, like I have with Chris Muffoletto and Greg Harmon, Katie Judice and Leah Mellum, I have some, you know, my chefs, Estevan and James, I have a crew that just is so amazing. They keep the consistency and the culture and the fun and the whole deal.
Right.
That we're, you know, it's easy to keep it going.
So who's on staff right now with the shutdown?
I've kept all my salary. The people I just mentioned who are on salary. So in Baton Rouge, I have my salaried managers and chefs, and in Lafayette, salaried managers and chefs. And the actual takeout business is able to pay for their salaries. You know, we're getting a little of the government help out and all that, but the majority of our cash flow right now is takeout, which isn't a lot. It's only maybe 10% of the sales we're doing or less.
Uh-huh.
But it's still enough to help them out. And, you know, a lot of them, our employees are on unemployment, but they're ready to get off and come back to work, which we just have to figure out, you know, how to get them to work or what to do, because we can't open for business.
Right.
Yeah, you know, until you open for business.
Most of your staff is servers that are contract, right? I mean, they're just hourly.
Yeah, we have a lot of part-time college. You know, it's a college-driven market like Baton Rouge. Uh-huh. You know, UL supports. We support UL. They support us, and we. That's the majority of our service staff is students, and so a lot of them, you know, are from the area, so they live with their parents, a lot of them are doing okay. It's right. Just they want to go back to work.
They want to go back. Yeah.
I mean, they're just sitting in their apartments or homes and nothing to do all day and still play Xbox and have beer pong parties or whatever. It gets old. And they want to get back and start having some fun and working with people and what they're born to do is the hospitality industry. I mean,
well, you had mentioned to me that your Baton Rouge restaurant is actually busier at this point, just because I guess the economy is different in Baton Rouge. Because as you
yes,
said, oil and
is.
Gas isn't as big there. It's there, but it's not as big as our economy. Can one restaurant kind of float the other one? Is that the way it's run, or are they separate?
They're separate. It's Baton Rouge is helping out more than anything else right now because of the amount of sales they're able to do takeout wise. Lafayette has some big nights, but it's just you can see the, you know, yesterday with the oils, you know, down a negative for the first time ever, whatever. I was like, this is gonna be a tough night, you know, and it was. I mean, people are getting anxious about their future, and you know their livelihood, and you know what they're able to spend, and they look at us. You know, we're in River Ranch. We buy the best food, best service, and all that. Even though we have amazing prices right now with the family meals and all the things that we're doing, it's still perceived as a higher expense restaurant that. You know, people are holding on to their dollars right now, which I understand.
I love your menu. I was looking at the family takeout, you know, for four.
Yeah,
boy,
it's great.
You've got some great, yummy options. I mean,
it's fantastic too. Yeah.
Yeah, the seafood arancini. I've never had that, and I thought, God, this is probably the time to try things like that. You know, just to perk up. Middle of the week, but well, can you talk about what's going on locally? You'd mentioned to me that the local restaurant association, I guess, is looking ahead. You guys work together as a team when you look at the industry, the region.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've been a part of the Louisiana Restaurant Association from the get go, and always very involved in the government part of it, and the lobbying and all the stuff that we need to do to make sure our industry stays strong, because if South Louisiana is known for anything, it's known for hospitality and restaurants and food and service and who we are. And, you know, New Orleans, great restaurant town, Baton Rouge, Lafayette, you have a lot of great talent that utilize our wonderful Gulf seafood, which we have an advantage over most states. And you know, with Lafayette, it's like I said, you have so many wonderful casual seafood places, and mm-hmm. and just, you know, we're all friends. We all work together. Try to. We all have the common goal of taking care of people and being able to help the lives of our employees, you know, through sales and through fun and the whole deal. And Restaurant Association is there for us for that. So that's been great. It's just with you mentioned the oil and, you know, the gas prices and stuff like that. Even though the hub city of Lafayette and the healthcare, and even though right now it's hard because of the doctors can't do these extra this extra work right now and all that, that's really, you know, so you take that and you throw in oil and gas being down and all that, people are scared. I mean, they don't know what to, you know, they don't know what the future holds for them. So they're just holding on to their money. They're going to go to grocery stores and buy cheap beer and cheap whiskey and food and go home and just hunker down until this thing opens up.
Yeah.
And even though we're an essential restaurant, that's why we're doing the family meal, and because it gives people a way to, at least they can't get out and dine, but at least they can get out, mm-hmm. pick up a great hot meal, not have to do the dishes, and enjoy. Even though it's so different than from being in the actual restaurant, and the energy and the music and the fun, they're still able to enjoy a little bit of Rufino's.
You have a favorite, or any favorite takeouts, or any favorite dishes you'd recommend?
I mean, takeouts, you know, takeout is hard, harder than people think. It's you know, you can't refire a steak if it goes to the house and it's not cooked right, or mm-hmm. so the family meals were designed for perfection of the meal. So that's why they're working so good. Anything, you know, chicken travels well, and any of our Italian dishes, lasagna is real easy, spaghetti and meatballs, they're all easy to take out because of the consistency of it. Mm-hmm. Steaks are a little harder because of the temperatures,
right?
And you know, veal is hard because it doesn't really stay warm, gets cold fast. So there's some different menu right. items, but they're all fantastic.
So I never had used Waiter. You know, I just like going in a place. If I'm going to eat a fine meal, I you know, now we can't do it, but on a typical day, I just find that the experience is really what makes a meal special when you're eating out at your place or some of the other fine places in Lafayette. How are y'all looking ahead to these guidelines? I know you told me you're serving on a task force that Senator Paige Cortez, you know, the legislative task force that's looking at reopening. What are y'all thinking is going to happen? Is this going to be doable with tables being spread apart? And
it is really the biggest conundrum out there. I was watching some of the national news right now, and that's, you know, the big question is the PPP money, the payroll protection deal, was supposed to help small businesses, but a lot of restaurants are looking at it as, you know, we have to meet the 75% requirement, which is almost impossible to bring back employees. Number one, we don't have any business. Two, a lot of them are on unemployment. It's just, it's really, really hard. And you know, we're going to have to, you know, a lot of restaurants are going to need money to reopen. It's like opening up a new restaurant. You have to buy a product. You have to train. You have to do, you know, buy linens. You have to, there's so many different aspects of our business that, you know, once you cut it off like that, it's hard to get back in. You know, I heard predictions yesterday where they're thinking more than 50% of the New Orleans restaurants will not come back.
Oh, gosh.
You know, yeah. it's really, you know, think about it. Wow. You know, that's yeah. why we go to New Orleans. You know, And I don't know how it's going to be in Baton Rouge or Lafayette, but it's hard. I mean, you get small. I mean, so you have to have six feet apart between tables, and you have to have 6 feet apart at the bar. But Ruffino's in Lafayette, Ruffino's in the River, it won't be as hard. My bar is huge. Mm-hmm. It's very long.
You got that back deck.
Yeah, the bartenders can stay way away from each other, more than 6 feet. Uh-huh. And I have outdoor seating, which we may have different rules for. So, and my two dining rooms are so big, I can separate tables. It shouldn't be that big of an issue. But if you take a little smaller place that maybe seats, 60 people, and it's very tiny inside, how do you separate tables 6 feet apart? They're about a foot apart right now, and you only have so many. So it's there's a lot we have to discuss. The big thing is I can tell you, just by talking to a bunch of my friends, especially girls, you know, don't want to wear masks
right.
in restaurants. They don't want their server wearing masks, which I understand. Number one, you have to eat, you have to drink, you have to, you know, you're using your mouth. You have to listen to your server. You know, that's going to be a big, funny, but that's going to be a big issue.
Yeah, it's not funny, but yet it's ridiculous, like, at the same
that's
time.
That's the one thing where people will be like, why are they letting these restaurants open and you have to wear masks? Well, we understand the viral thing. But I think the only way, really, Dan, is the until they can get the FDA-approved antibody test mm-hmm. testing, that's the only way I think restaurants will really be able to open with some confidence.
Well, we could see that we'd already had the
virus. Yeah, had it, and the people that, you know, can go out to eat and all that. And that's the only thing I can really see, because all the if they implement all those rules, laws, and things, which when we figure it out, it's I don't know how much business you'll actually be able to do.
Right.
You know, we do a lot of private parties in Lafayette and Baton Rouge. So, but you can't have more than 10 people. Well, most of my private parties are 20 or 30 people.
And people love to hop between the tables and.
Yeah, it's a gathering, uh-huh. and it's gonna be a struggle. There's no doubt about it. But you know, we have to make it work, because that's who we are. And
so this task force, Ruffin, that you were telling me about, Senator Cortez, it's all different industries, right? It's not just hospitality.
Yeah,
it's different businesses.
I think I'm one of the only restaurateurs actually on the task force. Car dealers, petrochemical, oil and gas. You got guys from all over the surface. So that's why I'm looking forward to having put my input in it, because, you know, I'm going to be representing the largest employer in the state when it comes to non-governmental. I mean, restaurants, we employ more than anybody.
Right. I meant to ask you too. Are you able to get seafood? Like, I've talked to Jim Gosson and Frank Randall and others, and you know, the seafood's out there, but with the market being off, have you been able to get your suppliers to get you what you need?
With the little we need, the thing is we're not selling bulk like Frank and them with the bulk crawfish and all that. We're just doing to go, you know, food. So mm-hmm. we're not using up a whole lot. But once we open up and the demand comes, unless they have employees, the seafood's out there. It's just getting the people to catch it and sell it and all that.
Oh, my gosh. But it's sitting. Like, I went over to Randall's. I was bringing Frank back some albums he had loaned me, because we had interviewed, and he wanted to show me all his, you know, the past things he had done. And one of the fishermen had, like, 5,000 pounds of I don't know if it was snapper or some really great seafood, and he didn't have any place to put it. Like, it was there was no market, you know, nowhere to go. And I think Frank helped him some. People could buy 5 or 10 pounds and drive through to get it. But I just thought, how many people is this affecting down the chain from you? You know.
Oh, the trickle down effect is crazy. It goes all over the place.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the hardest part, is, you know, we're going to want to get back into business. We're going to want sales and want people coming out. But are the people going to have money to come out and dine? You know, we're a place of celebration. There's going to be people looking to do birthdays from a month ago, you know, anniversaries from a month ago, and, you know, come out and celebrate. We'll do a little bit of that, and they'll have special nights. But the consistency of, you know, getting out there, doing business, you know, it's going to take time. It's just going
to
that's why we need the help from the government. Or whoever to get us back on our feet, and not just in a payroll plan, but we're going to need some money to reopen. I mean, to buy product, because we were forced to shut down. Our cash flow completely got shut off.
You know,
so for us to
even the most conservative people, I think, see that government does have a place. They may not agree on everything, but we can't do this by ourselves. I mean,
no, and then, you know, they left a lot of it up to the banks, and, you know, the big banks struggled with these loans.
It's so risky.
And the smaller ones, Iberia was fantastic. You know, at Iberia Bank, they handled most of their stuff, and they were incredible. You know, so it's we used to be with Chase, and we switched to Iberia, thank God, because we were probably still with Chase. God knows where we'd be. So it's gonna be a struggle for everybody. You know, they gotta open up this other money, because again, that's that PPP money that really doesn't help our industry. Our industry is gonna need, you know, nationwide, maybe worldwide, but nationwide, the restaurant industry is gonna need grants. We're gonna need money to all the spoiled food, all the, you know, just to reopening, getting people back to work, training, all that stuff. You know, we want to pay our people, which with the PPP, but two, if we're going to reopen and they're going to have a job, we got to be able to run our business. And if you don't have any money to buy seafood, you won't be able to sell it.
Right. Or haven't been able to pay your rent or your note.
Yeah.
For a few months. Well, is there anything any advice or anything you want to share as we're kind of coming to the conclusion? Anything that we didn't discuss?
No, you know, the thing is getting out and supporting local restaurants, local businesses that are in operation, even though we're not able to dine in, you know, continue to do takeout at the places that are offering it. I don't know how many right now in Lafayette have stopped or continued. A lot of them have switched over to boiled crawfish. We haven't. We're staying with our menu and trying to support the community that way. So just supporting the local restaurants, and because if we can't get through this, or the people that can't get through this because of lack of cash and just lack of desire, they're just going to close down, and you can have a lot of people out of jobs.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to take a while to get it back. So.
And a lot of culture gone also.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I want to end on a very positive note, and I wanted to share something I read about you in a bet you made with your friend Todd Graves. I hope this is accurate, but I was doing my little background research, and I saw that you had bet about LSU doing well last season. You want to talk about that? You bet some money, huh?
Yeah,
legally, I know.
Yeah, because we were in Las Vegas for a real estate convention, and, you know, Todd always wants to. You know, it was in May, so Todd said, "Go and let's make some bets." So we went this. It wasn't a great sports book. I forgot which hotel we were in. I wish we were in Caesars or something, but we were about to leave. So I went down and I put $1,000 on the Saints to win the Super Bowl, $1,000 on LSU to win a national championship. And I was looking at, I was going to do $1,000 on Joe Burrow to win the Heisman.
Oh.
And for some reason, they couldn't, at this one place, they didn't have that up, although it was available. It was 200 to 1.
Yeah, big long shot.
And I made the two bets, but I couldn't find. I had to go to Caesars to make the other one, but we were leaving, and I had to get back. I had this thing, so I thought I'd made it, and obviously I didn't. That'd have been a $200,000.
Oh my gosh!
Win, but we ended up winning LSU, which was 24-1, so we won 24,000, and we don't. I think Coach Ogeron chose a charity to give it to that we wanted to donate. So it was just a fun deal for Believe me, I would have loved to have kept the 24,000 and split it, but when your best friend's a billionaire, it's a lot easier for him just to be like, let's give it to charity, which was my idea anyway. So
you're lucky to have friends like that.
Yeah. Jeez.
Well, Ruffin Rodrigue, I want to thank you so much for, again, being so patient with me. You know, you couldn't tell from your voice, but I had a little difficulty at the beginning, and I love doing this podcast, and I really have great appreciation for people that help me record it and mix it, because it's not that it's hard, but it's just not the top thing on my skill set. So I want to thank the people that help make this podcast possible. Jason Sikora at Raider will be mixing the tape. And, of course, our sponsors, Iberia Bank, Lafayette General, and Raleigh Marketing. I want to thank them all for making this possible. And I want to thank our listeners for being so loyal. You can get this anywhere you get your podcast, or you can go to our website, discoverlafayette.net, and not only find Ruffin Rodrigue's interview, but the over 140 other interviews we have. It's a great way to learn more about our community. So on behalf of Discover Lafayette, thank you. This is Jan Swift.